Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to Comic Conversation, episode 225, where we talk all things comics for the week of January 9th, 2019. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I'm, like, into season 4 of Game of Thrones. Again.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm pretty sure you've seen every episode already.
Seen every episode, read all the books, but starting again in April, and I wanted to watch something good. And I knew it was good. And I forgot all kinds of stuff. When you rewatch the show, you learn things, and you're like, wow, I was really stupid for not noticing that.
Well, it's one of those things to where you're following one thing, and when you're watching it again, you already know what happened, so you're actively looking for things that over.
Well, no, I don't mean that. Like, here's the biggest thing. So, one of the biggest things from, like, the last season was Jamie goes to see Marjorie's grandma, and before he kills her, she reveals that she's the one who poisoned Joffrey, and it's like the best death ever.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And it's like, yeah, she fucking owned you right before dying. But what I didn't remember was she had already revealed that she killed him. Like, I thought that was the reveal. It wasn't. She said in, like, the next episode, she flat out told Marjorie, like, you didn't think I'd let you marry him, did you? And then she started fucking around with the necklace, and Littlefinger told her he put the poison in the necklace and he was working with somebody else. The fucking camera cuts immediately to the Tyrells. I completely missed all this the first time I watched it. And in the books, I'm not sure they ever revealed who did it anyway. So I was like, fuck, how did I miss that? Or maybe I just forgot.
Tell everybody your theory you told me on Facebook chat the other day.
I don't remember.
You said Littlefinger is the big bad?
Oh, that wasn't a theory. That was just factual. I'm watching this, and Littlefinger is the biggest bad guy in the show. Like, human bad guy. Like, obviously, the fucking White Walkers is a bad guy. But, like, he's way worse than, like, Cersei. Because Cersei's just insane at this point in the show. She's gone totally fucking crazy evil. But Littlefinger is, like, ambitious evil.
He's, like, calculated evil.
Yeah, he's like poor kid, but he worked his way up to this level, and he ain't gonna stop. Like, he's gonna keep going and going and going, and he's like, he's gonna die. Somebody's gonna kill him. All the horrible characters in the show will eventually die. It's just they kill him off a little slower than.
Or will they?
Well, in the fucking last season or the one before, they fucking blew up that church and they killed half the cast.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
I was fucking pissed. I'm like, fucking Queen Marjorie was like my favorite character, and they killed her.
Shouldn't that be, you know, shouldn't you be used to that by now? Isn't that, what's the expression?
They spent a long time not killing anyone.
Manus operandi, or if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Modus operandi.
Isn't that the
Yeah, but they stopped killing people. Like, they hadn't done it for a while, so I wasn't ready for it.
It's like pro wrestling. It's like they gotta bring the action down. They gotta slow down, so when they do all the stuff, it means something.
Well, and remember, the first, like, 4 or 5 seasons, I'd read the book, so I knew everything that was gonna happen. When they killed Ned Stark or they did the Red Wedding, I was waiting for that shit, because I knew what was gonna happen. Now, it's just the show, and they're doing different stuff, so I really don't know what's gonna happen. So it can actually shock me.
Oh, so they're wait. I'm a little confused now at this point.
Oh, the show's ending in the next season. There's still like 3 more books.
I know they're ahead of the books, but how do you know for a fact it's going to be different once the books and if the books ever come out at this point?
Is it spoilers if I give something from the book that's not in the show, and the book came out like 3 years ago.
It's not spoiler because the book has been out for a while. Like, had the book come out this week, I'd be like, clamp down. Maybe we'll give everybody try to say in the next 30 seconds, and then we'll go to the next segment. If you don't want spoilers, then skip ahead like 30 seconds
for the Game of Thrones books. The cliffhanger in the last book that came out was Daenerys had another brother who nobody knew about, who was the guy Varys was working for all along, and he doesn't exist in the show. That was the big surprise thing.
Cool.
So, yeah. So yeah, it's gonna go a different. Also, fucking Bran, his mom, Ned Stark's wife, isn't dead in the books.
Oh,
she's a zombie woman. She got brought back by the Red Priest.
Nice.
So she's like a scary zombie called like Lady Grayscale or something who fucking slits people's throats and shit.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
They're good books.
Yes. All right. With out of the way, let's go into our first segment this week. News.
Kuzum on Zespa, in Mandalorian. War's over, I'm a piece of Mandalorian. The story is dumb, Star Wars historians deep in debate, but they play at Benegans. Rhyme renegade, show to penetrate, first and second defense. I won't hesitate, got a job to do with Darth, the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, someone he really hates. I don't give a fuck, I'm after Solo. For all I care, it could be Han at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good when a Jabba's run a shop in your neighborhood. Think you can cook, I got a grappling hook. Let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked. I'm a devious, degenerate defender of the devil, shoving all the trash compactors on the detention level. My backpack got jets, well I'm Bola.
Tony got to pick music this week, yeah.
Yeah. I decided, I'm like, you know what? Alex is doing his indie gimmick. I want to pick music now. So I'm going to pick some nerdcore hip hop. That's some MC Chris with Fets Vet.
Is there a large number of people in the nerdcore family?
And there's so many, in fact. That's going to be my recurring gimmick, is I'll just pick another song.
Because, like, I know MC Chris.
Yes.
But he's the only one I know. Like, that's not shit, like, I would listen to on my own, but, like, he's funny.
Yes, very much so. So, I'll just progress every time I get to pick music, which we still haven't hammered out what's the schedule going to be, but I'll pick somebody and I'll try to pick their biggest song.
Usually you don't like picking music, so I just...
Well, because Alex, I know, is an aficionado, but he pretty much told me, he's like, dude, no matter what you're picking, I'm probably not going to like it, so just pick whatever you want.
I don't think I said that. If I said that, I was probably joking.
It's funny, if you said that, you saying that made me more comfortable. I was like, oh, okay, so he's going to hate no matter what I pick, so I'm just going to pick whatever I want.
Well, it's, again, I think we had this talk, and it's like, I told him, I'm like, I didn't write the fucking music. Like, I don't get offended. I know some people do that. It's like a weird thing. It's like, I don't care if somebody doesn't like something I like. Like, unless if I made it, like if I wrote a song and you didn't like, well, I probably still wouldn't care. But I might be more offended. But since I had no hand in creating this stuff, like, I don't care if somebody else likes it.
It's more so, I don't really like music. And the music I'm going to pick is going to be from that point of view.
Oh. Well, I was more thinking, like, our old co-host Dave, like, if I tell him I didn't like something that a Japanese wrestling company does, like, he gets personally offended. And it's like, dude, are you on the take? Like, you getting paid from these motherfuckers? I don't see why you give shit otherwise.
I like, I know I've told you off air, but I haven't told you on the show, but the Red Letter Media guys, they acknowledge that people say they're on the take for Marvel. So now they made a bit where they openly look into the camera and say, cause we received millions of dollars from Marvel to put these films over.
And that's why we're doing YouTube videos. Cause we got all this fucking Disney money.
Even though, no, actually, if we were on the take for anybody, we'd be Warner Brothers homers because we put over the DC stuff. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the DC stuff is better. It's like, that's my thing with that. It's like, the Marvel movies are better. Like, they're more fun. I don't understand why you're on the take if you like the more fun movie more.
No, but I'm saying when it comes to books and this show, we put over the DC stuff way more than we ever do put over the Marvel stuff.
Yeah. Oh, this is out of date by now, by the way, but I just want to say, haha, Bears fans. I live in the Midwest too, so fucking that Eagles game was, and I'm an Eagles fan, was fucking amazing.
Yeah, that was Sunday, right?
Yeah. At work. We watched first three quarters of the game, and then we had to go home. I almost didn't want to go home because I was going to miss something.
Nice. Yeah, and the radio doesn't really do it justice.
No, and I actually don't know the sports. Well, I don't know any of the radio stations in my car because I just hooked my phone up. But
well, especially if it's for like NFL coverage, I'm sure there's a station that'll cover it.
Oh yeah, I could just cycle through and probably find it.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's not that hard either.
I didn't. I just fucking ran home and looked.
All right. Since I couldn't find anything for news this week, but you still wanted the segment, so we can pick music
play
every
the
week.
Music. Well, because it was your turn.
Yeah, but for me, for you, my threshold for news is stuff I want to talk about, and your threshold is I want a song, so I'm gonna pick.
This might be newsworthy.
All right. So what's our first news story, Alex?
Doomsday Clock number 9 pushed back 3 weeks. No reason given. I just want to talk about this because, like, this fucking series has been coming out for, like, 2 years now. And we already have it revealed. Nothing going on in this is having any effect on the rest of the DC universe. They're referencing things that are going on in the DC universe in this, but none of the things taking place actually are doing anything. Right? Like Doc Manhattan and
to be fair,
Superman Initiative. And,
to be fair, they're not really doing all that much that would affect the mainline DC continuity. It's not like Black Adam's nation for D-list villains is really going to affect anybody's book.
The world turning against superheroes?
You could argue when that's going on in the continuity.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Nothing in this is connecting. Well, we know when it's going on. It's going on right now because they mentioned Heroes in Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's apparently happening at the same time.
I can defend the delay as, okay, it's selling really good, so they're going to want to space these out so everyone that's reading it has time to read it. Because I have to imagine it's still probably selling really well, and even though we're a couple weeks out from the last issue of Doomsday Clock, people are still buying that.
Dude, they're only coming out once a month, and like half the issues have been 2 months late.
And see, that's what I'm also saying too. They've already established, you know, it's gonna come out when it comes out, when it's done.
But
it's not like, Doomsday Clock, you know, the last three issues came out on time, but this issue's late. It's like all of them have been late. Either for the artist, or which they blamed before in the past. And
but like, now they don't blame any. I'm just saying, like, why? He knew what this was since he wrote Rebirth, which was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, but when a book's doing really good, they'll try to space it out. Like, how many Marvel events did? I mean, remember the one we point to all the time is always going to be Secret Wars. That was only supposed to be 7 issues, but because it sold so well, they made that fluffer eighth issue.
That's a different thing, though. That they extended it. Like, they made it longer. It's staying the same. They just keep releasing shit late. Like, that doesn't help sales, because comic book stores have already put their orders in.
Mm.
Like, they already ordered the shit. It's not like they're going to order more. Like, oh, this fucking thing's coming out late now. I better order more. Like, well, they don't do that.
I'll make a devil's advocate argument. Maybe here we're complaining how it doesn't tie into the mainline DC continuity. Maybe part of the reason why it's being delayed is because something happens in the mainline DC continuity that affects Doomsday Clock. So they have to wait for everything to roll out and then they can pull the trigger on Doomsday Clock, whatever's going to happen in that book.
Maybe.
I think the biggest disappointment of all will be with this Doomsday Clock is, if it ends and none of our questions get answered and all the questions that we've had for Rebirth just get kicked down the road.
Well, we already had some of the questions answered. Like, Doc Manhattan was behind the new 52. They explained that. So that was a pretty big, well, it wasn't actually, because we thought Flashpoint was behind the new 52. They just changed what was behind it, but we know it was Doc Manhattan. We know he fucked with the timeline, so that's why the timeline is all jacked up. And we know people are capable of remembering the way shit was before. That didn't happen in Doomsday Clock. It happened in another book. But still, we found out.
And they sort of spoiled parts of the ending to this already, because we've not straight up solicitations, But we've seen teasers of stuff with the Legion, with the Society. So it's like,
okay. Well, we always knew the Legion was going to come back, and we always knew the Justice Society was going to come back because they started teasing that in Rebirth.
Because remember this, when they first started Rebirth, it was supposed to be a 2-year storyline, and it was going to end. Now, I assumed, because they teased Doomsday Clock after the first year. So I assumed Doomsday Clock was going to be sort of a halfway point, and then at some point we were going to get a wrap-up to all this, and then the DC continuity would continue to exist as it were, and we would have answers to most of our questions of what happened between Flashpoint and Rebirth.
Okay, you want to know my real theory on what they're going to do?
Nothing?
Doomsday Clock isn't going to end shit. Doomsday Clock is going to end on a cliffhanger, which is going to be resolved in something crisis, because DC hasn't had a crisis in a few years. So we got to have another crisis, and then we got to redo fucking reality again, because DC, we have to do that every 5-10 years.
What book were we reading, and they mentioned all the crises, or the crisi?
That was a book we read this week. That was Young Justice, I think.
They brought up the...
Or Green Lantern? I can't remember.
I can't remember. I believe it was...
They said there had been seven... It was Young Justice, because that's why...
Really? I thought it was Green Lantern, because when they were talking about Earth...
No. It was Young Justice, because they said every time Earth has a crisis, and they've had seven, it affects us.
Mm.
And they don't know it.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, that being connected is something I'm going to bury that book for. Spoilers.
All right. But, yeah, I think you're probably right. We're not going to get all of our answers, all our questions answered, so.
But we're getting a Legion book, which Bendis might be right.
And I presume they're going to bring the Society back in some way, shape, or form as well.
Justice Society should come back. But, I mean, the problem is, like, Johnny Thunder's, like, 100 years old.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Alan Scott is dead.
I'm sure they
just bring him back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm assuming with the end of Doomsday Clock, they're going to bring them back.
Grant Morrison's pissed because J.J. Thunder no longer exists.
Well,
he never got over it anyway.
I'm sure they'll sit down and talk to him, and they'll be like, look, here's the script for the final issue of Doomsday Clock. Stop crying.
And he's like, okay, so kill Johnny Thunder and put the little black kid back in. He's like, I'm the first one who replaced people with young black kids. By the way, I just want to say this because it kind of pissed me off. On the cover, because DC, the big comic they're pushing this month is Naomi.
And you know what? We always put that over from DC because Marvel, they'll have like weeks of just – or they'll have like, for example, 1 week and there'll be like 5 or 6 new books. And it's like maybe one of them sells, but then the other 5 don't. Whereas DC, they focus all their books and they say, hey, this book is coming out next week or next month, buy it. And all the books will focus on it and they'll really push that one book really hard.
Yeah, and that's good, but here's the thing. Naomi is like the new young black character.
Mm-hmm.
And on really big, it said... From Brian Michael Bendis, the creator of Miles Morales. Now, I...
Should have said also Riri Williams and someone who made Luke Cage the leader of the Avengers.
First of all, Miles Morales, out of all the characters he created, is Well, Jessica Jones would be the biggest, actually, because she got a TV show. But Miles Morales, I guess he'd be up there, like he's bigger than fucking Riri. But... Like, you're going to pick the one partially black character he made, and that's the only thing he did, and you're going to advertise? So what does that tell me this book is about? Is the defining feature that it's a black character? And should I be happy that a white man is writing a black character?
Yeah.
Like, is that telling me something?
And hopefully she'll be like, and Miles, she'll be devoid of a personality. And it's okay, because she's black. That's enough of a gimmick.
It's not. Like, black people, I know some of them. I live in Iowa, so I don't know that many, but I do know a few. And they have personalities, much like white people.
Yeah, and I'm sure when you're describing them to your friends, the first thing isn't, so how can you describe so-and-so? They're black.
Oh, he's black.
Like, that's the first thing everybody says about Miles. It's like, oh, so tell me something about Miles. Well, he's the black Spider-Man.
He's not even all black. He's half Puerto Rican.
The movie enters the Spider-Verse, attempted to give him a personality, and they almost got there.
Good.
But
good for them.
So much of it was, okay, we'll do X, Y, and Z, and it'll help flesh out the character. But overall, part of the gimmick is he's like Peter, and then he's sort of the straight man. You know, everything is happening to him, so he's reacting like an average person. And it's like,
Well, you do. It is useful to have a character like that.
But I'm saying it's been proven you can make a new minority character and give them a personality, and the personality is what gets them over. And the fact that they're a minority is just sort of an added bonus. Like,
yeah,
I realize
it makes them feel good at night.
I realize, like, Kamala Khan's, like, sort of like lightning in a bottle, but it's like it's not that hard. I understand you can't keep doing it and expect all these characters to get over, but it's not rocket science.
Also, dude, I fucking love Kamala, but nobody reads her goddamn book. Like, let's stop pretending.
No, but I'll say that everybody loves to use her.
Do they use her as much anymore? Well, we don't know, because we don't read that much Marvel.
She was in Infinity Wars. And how many crossovers have we seen that they've done in Marvel, and she's usually amongst the people that they're using?
Yeah, but they use a lot of people in crossovers.
Yeah, but they primarily use people who are over. It's not like
she was in multiple books.
It's not like
Champions.
It's not like, oh, okay, we're gonna do Civil War 2, and we're gonna have Iron Fist be front and center. It's like, no, we're gonna focus to choose. Whoa. We're gonna choose to spotlight characters who are kind of over.
His show was the first Netflix show to fail.
Yep. And now they've all failed.
Well, they didn't fail, actually. Disney, the theory is, since they're all gone, and like Daredevil and Jessica Jones weren't failures, Disney just wanted them back because they're launching their own streaming service.
I wonder if they're going to recast them, or they're just going to let sit long enough to where people are be like, okay, it's been long enough, we can reboot these characters again.
Well, Disney's own Twitter tweeted out a picture of the cast of Daredevil when it was announced it got canceled. So, I mean, that's the one that has legs. Like, I just don't see them putting those shows on a Disney streaming service.
I could argue all these shows are failures because they never tied into the movies.
That doesn't make them failures.
Like, but I'm saying it's like, okay, they had an opportunity to highlight them to make them part of the overall Marvel
and
continuity.
They did.
When?
During the shows, they mentioned in Daredevil, they mentioned when the aliens attack New York. That's the only thing it should have done. Those shows were so different from the movies.
But I'm saying, okay, in Infinity War, where you have all the superheroes, it's like you can't include the Netflix Defenders in there.
Why would you?
You got Black Widow. Come on, you can't fit Luke Cage.
Yeah, but
on that
she
team.
Was already an Avenger.
I'm just saying, you has all these jobber heroes, and you can't include the Defenders.
No, that's true. But I mean, that was a rights thing, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, but I'm saying you set yourself up for failure because you already acknowledge, oh, we're not gonna mention these. Basically, we're gonna treat these Netflix shows like we do Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, the people that want to acknowledge they exist will know it, but the movies are gonna pretend
well,
like they don't.
Yeah,
exist.
But it's like in the comics, like, Daredevil used to never be involved in the big reality altering.
Yeah, but every now and then, you know, Spider-Man would show up or something.
Yeah.
And we knew that was never going to happen.
They don't have the rights to Spider-Man, so they can't do. I don't think that had anything to do with it, because I think more people watch Daredevil than read comics, so they're not as used to, like, crossovers and stuff. Like, they don't expect them. And I don't think the shows would have benefited from it anyway, so.
All right, since we're talking all things Marvel already, let's talk our second news story.
Oh, yeah, so we've been reading Uncanny X-Men, and then I was on Newsarama, and I just saw a story, and it's like, oh, there's, like, 27 different covers for the new X-Men event. And I'm like, oh, what's this? And it's called Age of X-Man, which is a horrible name. But I realized, oh, so this story we're reading in Uncanny X-Men is leading to an event where apparently X-Man is the villain. And when we talk about that book, I'm going to complain about it a lot.
It's funny because I'm reading this and it reads like it's going to wrap up pretty soon.
You would think that, but apparently, given the name of it, I would assume he just wins. And it's not referenced in any other book.
Okay. Here's my only question on that story. Do they announce the writer on it? Is it Bryson?
That's a good question. I think they were just talking about the covers. I mean, it would have to be him, wouldn't it?
You never know. They've done things where they have the regular writer set something up for someone else. Like, remember,
yeah, but for 10 issues?
That's true. I'm just remembering, like, remember Batman? They had King set up all the stuff that was going to happen in Night of the Monster Men, which wasn't written by King.
Well, okay, so there's an Alpha, because it's doing what Age of Apocalypse did. And he is not writing that, but then there will be a series and presumably an Omega issue. So I don't know who's writing it.
Oh, okay. I'm going to just assume it's Bryson.
He's not writing this first thing that's coming out.
Yeah, but that's usually the Countdown stuff. It usually is done by someone else. Sometimes it's
Alpha
done by
is little... not the same as Countdown.
I'm sorry?
Alpha is not the same as a Countdown thing. It is the first part of the
you're
story.
Right. Sorry, I get the Countdowns and the Alphas.
Marvel set Alpha as code for part one in the story so we can sell two number ones. That's like, not to be a dick, that's what it actually is.
No, you're 100% right. That's exactly what I was about to say. It's like, I forgot they have that new marketing gimmick so they could sell multiple number ones.
Oh, it's not new. It came from Age of Apocalypse, and that's what this is playing off of.
But I remember for a while, since I have been reading, they sort of toned down on that.
Oh, yeah, but they got to bring it back now because you got to sell comics. Yeah,
exactly. All right, that's going to do it for the news portion of the show. Let's move on to our next segment, this week's books. Any guesses on the song?
Is it from Genesis?
Yes.
Because the fucking reverb is breaking my goddamn ears. Jesus.
That is, if you're of the Japanese persuasion, that is Super Shinobi 2. Or as if you're from the West, Shinobi 3 or Return of the Ninja Master.
I was going to say, if it was a Japanese game, nobody played it because they didn't buy Genesis in Japan.
Well, if Dave's listening, he's going to be like, excuse me, Shinobi 3, you mean Super Shinobi 2?
This is the first time I made fun of him for that.
What's that?
Hey, actually, Super Mario Brothers 2 is Doki Doki Paniku.
The funny thing about that is, we make fun of him for that, but he's never actually done that.
He's done shit like that, but it's usually, like he'll link something.
He'll
be like, well,
Link.
Voices of Wrestling said, oh my God, can I just rant about that briefly?
And it's comic related, folks, so don't think we're
just... It's wrestling, but it's comic related. So, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, who are like, they're guys who work for New Japan and they work for American Indies. They're like the biggest indie wrestling stars. Or, well, not Kenny Omega yet, but he'll be there. And Dusty Rhodes Kid. They're starting a promotion. There's no information on this promotion or whatever, but everyone is sucking it off. And, you know, I'm me, so I'm trashing it. And apparently other people are trashing it because Dave links to somebody who said they compared the reaction to it. It's just like when Image Comics launched and everybody said it was going to be shit. But then all the big companies started copying what they were doing after. And I go, wow, that guy knows nothing about comics. Because to compare this to Image Comics when they started means this is going to be a giant fucking failure after like a year. And he's like, well, the Voices of Wrestling guys said it was a good analogy. And I'm like, okay, so they don't know anything about comics either.
No, like, I don't think that's what they said. They said it's going to be like Image Comics in the sense that they have all these plans, they have all these ideals, and then like within a couple of months, they all fall through.
Oh, they said that?
Somebody said that. I don't know if that's Voices of
Wrestling. I don't think it was them because he said it was a good analogy.
Or the person that was talking about it on Twitter. That's what they said.
That guy said,
well, because
people like me are going to feel stupid.
They're acknowledging on this the wrestling thing, whatever, the Elite Wrestling. All the other wrestling, that's the name of the company. That they're going to have, you know, oh, we're going to pay the men and the women the same. And we're going to try to provide them healthcare. And it's like, yeah, that sounds like, well, that sounds like Image.
They didn't say that, though. Meltzer did a mailbag just for questions on All Elite Wrestling. And they asked stuff like, are they going to have a wellness program? And it's like, first of all, they're not actually doing shows yet. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. But on the other side of that, like a fucking wellness program, they've signed 9 people.
Well, 13.
And none of those people look like they're on fucking anything.
Well, except maybe Dad Bod Jericho.
Dad Bod Jericho might get on something so he doesn't have Dad Bod anymore. But yeah, I don't think they're going to be paying to get fucking drug testing
but
done
it's,
on their
it's like
talent.
It's like Image in the sense that they built it up, and realistically, there was no way for them to deliver. And I feel like that's what All Elite Wrestling is going to be like. Image.
Image could have delivered. The problem was you had artists trying to write books and they couldn't do that. And then when you took their editors away and when you took any pressure to put books out, all but like 2 of them crumbled and did not put the books out.
And then remember initially they're like, oh yeah, the gimmick is going to be for Image. Like we're going to be all creator owned and you're going to be able to keep the rights. And then
fucking people.
Yeah, exactly. And then they started walking that back, and it's like I can see that being with All Elite Wrestling because they're promising all these things that they're gonna be, you know, they're gonna be so much different. They're gonna treat the talent right. Wins and losses are gonna matter. It's like, okay, you say that now. Let's see if you say that 3 years from now.
Dude, it's gonna end up being the name of like 3 shows a year. Let's fucking. Well, they're we'll not see. Gonna do anything.
We'll see.
I'm on audio now saying that so we can pull it back up and I'll be like, oh, I was wrong. It actually did change the world.
There you go.
Of pro wrestling.
Well, since we're talking all things Image, let's open up with our first book, an Image book. Criminal Number 1, writer Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips. And it's funny we're talking about wrestling because there was a small segment of professional wrestling in this comic.
It wasn't really central to the storyline, but it did exist. I liked this book, by the way. I'll get that out of the way.
And I had to tell Dave, former Comic Conversations host. He's like, why is there wrestling in this book? He's like, is it a wrestling book? It's like, no. And in fact, I like the way they treated it. It's like, wrestlers are people too, and they do other stuff after their careers are over.
And I had a job as a wrestler.
Yeah.
In Japan after World War II. Yeah, so this book started out and it was like a kid who goes into an old man's house and he's trying to steal this really fancy, expensive looking diamond necklace from him. The old man's got like dementia, so he keeps forgetting that he caught the kid breaking in and forgetting why he's there, et cetera, which, you know, was you're thinking like this kid has a huge dick, and then the old man, when he sees him with the necklace, completely loses his shit and attacks him, And the kid, instead of like knocking down the old man or whatever, he fucking knocks him down and then starts like stomping the shit out of him. And he goes to the car where his friend is waiting for him. And he's like, yeah, he thought I was his grandson. So at that point, like, the kid's still a dick. But at this point, like, you were thinking, like, he just beat the shit out of his own granddad and stole from him. So that's not good. But it turns out it was just some dude. Well, the reason he was doing this was because his dad is in jail and he had to pay his bail. So he pawns it off to someone who's apparently involved in organized crime. Because the dad gets out and the kid tells him what he did, and the dad fucking breaks his arm, breaks a couple of his ribs, teach him a lesson. Nothing permanent, he said. And so basically what they're getting across is the dad's kind of a piece of shit. Like, he's like a career criminal thief kind of guy. Well, the issue was that old man they beat up, or he beat up to steal from, was friends with the local crime boss's dad and or granddad. I can't remember, but
it was just dad.
A relative. It was just his dad. Okay, so it was a friend of his dad's. So he tells the kid who did it, his dad, like, yeah, so he got $5,000 for this thing, so you gotta pay me the $5,000 back, and then also you have to pay me $20,000 for the old man's distress there. Because, you know, you got the shit kicked out of him. And the old man was a pro wrestler in Japan in the 70s. Or the 40s, by the way. 50s? It would have been the 50s, right? I don't think they had American heel wrestlers while the war was going on.
And let me tell you, the heat he'd probably get, though, would be off the charts, though.
Oh, yeah, he said the old man, that was one of the problems he had. He started getting angry because everybody fucking hated him. Because mm-hmm. they hated Americans. Because, you know, I imagine they did. Like, I don't think that's inaccurate. Yeah, but, so $20,000 and he's got 2 weeks to get it.
Otherwise, they're gonna kill the kid.
Yeah, or he'll kill the kid. So he's gotta make a big score, to get his kid out of trouble. And, he hears about his old best friend, his partner in crime, one of the only honest criminals ever. He's died unexpectedly, like had a heart attack. And he goes to meet up with his ex-wife, the guy's ex-wife, fucks her, so there's another winner.
No, did they allude that they've been screwed around behind his back?
Yeah, they did. Okay. They did. So he goes to the funeral, and then he goes to a bar after, and there's, you know, a bunch of criminal types there again, because it's the world they run in, and he hears a guy talking, and earlier he told a story about this one time he stole a plane with the guy, and it paid like $40,000. Well, he hears one of the guys in the bar telling a story about, yeah, this one time he stole this plane, and he got paid $100,000 for that, and he's like, wait a minute, he told me we were getting $40,000 for that. So he checks with the guy confirms that he throws a punch at him, and then gets the shit kicked out of him, because, as he points out, a lot of the guys here know how to fight.
He's like, I already had like 4 whiskeys, and, you know, back in the day, I probably could have taken them all, but
I'm older now.
He's all, but that was back in the day, not today.
Yeah, so he gets the shit kicked out of him, but the ex-wife, she did tell him, he died downtown across from like this hardware store, electronics store, something. So he goes down there to figure out what the fuck he was even doing down there. Because he figures there has to be something in it. Like, he's going to knock the place off, or it's a front for a drug ring or something. Like, there's got to be more to this. Otherwise, why would he be there? And then he realizes this truck pulls up, and they got all the day laborers there. And truck pulls up and starts handing out money to the guys. He later finds out this is for what they worked last week. They come and they pay them in cash. So he's like, holy shit, this is fucking perfect. They got two guys with guns, but I get a couple of my friends. We run them off the road somewhere. We kill the guys. We take the money. Bam. I got my money. Everything's fine. And then the narration, which is from our lead character, he points out that in a year, he'll be dead. And basically this is where it all started. So he's already told us the guy's going to die. So our main character is going to die. And now the story is going to be about how that happens. So it was, it's not an uncommon.
See, that's my only real criticism of this book. This is obviously Ed Brubaker, great writer, knows how to tell a really good story. My only real nitpick of the story of this book is it doesn't have a strong hook. It doesn't have a real gimmick to it where it's like.
Well, I think the strong hook is how does he die?
To me, that's fine, but it's like. This it doesn't stand out. It's like, okay, I feel like there's like a dozen indie books that are like this. I'm sure they're not all written by Ed Brubaker, but it's not like Kill or Be Killed, where it obviously has a gimmick. It just feels like, okay, if you're into like really well written crime stories, this is going to be your book. But I feel like it's a little generic.
Oh, see, and like Kill or Be Killed, the reason I never took to it was because all the fucking demon shit I thought was goofy, and I didn't like it, and I didn't like being dicked around where, oh, is it real or is he crazy? Like that I have seen a million times, so I didn't care for that at all, whereas this was much more grounded. I think the bigger problem he's going to have is he's an incredibly unlikable lead character.
Oh, that's not a problem at all. I mean...
I'm interested to see how he dies, but like, am I going to care? Cause he's kind of a shit heel. Like.
And he's one of those people where he's so bad that when he's doing horrible things, he won't acknowledge them. But when it happens to him, it's an atrocity. Like, yeah. he's talking about how he got screwed over from his partner, you know, for all these years. He's like, wait, he ripped me off in this plane deal. I bet he was screwing me everything we did.
Yeah, but he's fucking his wife.
Yeah, but he's completely oblivious to it. And you're reading this, it's like, okay, dude, you're screwing around with his wife behind his back, so you're not exactly white knight over here.
Well, he did feel bad about fucking her, now that he was dead.
But he didn't feel bad before?
No, apparently not. Well, maybe he didn't do it until after they broke up.
I
don't know.
It was implied.
They didn't say, but like I said, he's a piece of shit, so maybe not. I mean, the only thing you could say for him is like, well, he's doing all this to help out his son, but the reason his son got in trouble in the first place is because he's a shit dad, and his son's going to be a criminal just like he was. So it's like you raised your kid badly, but you're going to be risking your life to help him. So I guess that's good.
Like I'm gonna read the next issue because it's such a well written book. But if you're pitching this series to me and you don't have Ed Brubaker's name attached to it, I'm just like
Well, I mean, would I have read this if like what did I say? Like you were like, oh, there's a new Image number one, and I go, oh, Brubaker's writing it, and you're like, okay, we'll read it, like. That he's the draw.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm not in a rush to read the next issue either. It's like, yeah, I'll read the next issue. I'm not eagerly anticipating the next issue because it's like I don't know where it's going necessarily. You mentioned at the end of this book they tease that, you know, he's gonna have the best year of his life. He's gonna fall in love and then eventually he's gonna die. It's like okay, that's cool, but. You know, I read a lot of comics about stuff like this. What makes this one so
good? He's going to have his brains blown out, is I think what he said. I don't know. Maybe he kills himself. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. I liked it, though.
Yeah, as did I. All right, since we're talking Image, let's move on to Vertigo with Dreaming number 5, writer Simon Spurr, art by Beckley's Evely.
Okay, so Tony didn't read this, so I'm doing this on my own.
As I told you off air, I read an issue of this, didn't know what was going on. So I decided to just let you solo review this. And I promised you by the next time we review this, I will go back from issue one and read all of them.
I should probably go back and read issues one and two.
Yeah, because we started this on issue three. So not only was I confused because of the subject matter, but we were reading on issue three.
Yeah, and folks, this is not a book to start on issue three, just so you know. There's a lot of stuff going on here. But I do know what's going on with the current story because I've read the last three issues. So at the end of the last issue, Lucien took Dora, who we still don't know what her whole deal is, but apparently that's part of her character, to Destruction's realm. Basically because there'd be nobody there because Destruction's gone. So he knew nobody'd be there. So he took her there, and the narrator is talking to him. Like, they have the narration, and he, like, he's responding to it, and she thinks he's crazy, which is kind of cute, but he thinks it's Dream talking to him. So they have that going on, and we cut back to the Dreaming, and the Dreams have kind of risen up against the Judge. The Judge, by the way, is a fantastic villain. He is great. He is my favorite villain in comics right now because he's such a giant asshole. Mm-hmm. The Dreaming is completely falling apart, though, because they pointed this out. They were having an argument in Destruction's realm. They're like, well, Dream doesn't need to be here because look at this place. This place is still here. The reason Destruction's realm can still exist without Destruction is because there was nothing there. It's not a place people visit. The Dreaming is a living place that has people who live in it. And when you dream, you go there. So it also has actual people in it. I mean, them in their dreams, but still, it people visit this place. It's very different. And without Dream, it gets destabilized. It starts coming apart. That was one of the problems in the original series. And Dream was locked away for 70 years. The Dreaming went to shit. The problem here is it's going to shit much faster because the Judge is a piece of crap and is doing terrible things. Well, Judge is trying to hold the Dreaming together, and to do this, he took 143 lucid dreamers. Do you know what a lucid dreamer is, Tony?
Like in the real world or in this?
In the real world.
No.
Okay, so there's no context in the book. I mean, they vaguely explain it. So a lucid dream is a dream in which you know you're dreaming.
Wow, okay.
And they are real things, and some people only have dreams like this. I imagine it's quite fun for them.
Have you ever had those kind of dreams?
Yes, I have. Okay. I actually, when I dream, which is fairly infrequently that I can remember, I do tend to know I'm dreaming. So, which kind of scares me, because if the Dreaming is a real place, I would be captured. he took them and he tied them up, and he is using them to maintain the integrity of the Dreaming, basically, because they cause problems for the Dreaming. Because when you go to the Dreaming, you're not supposed to be aware that you're in another place. You're just supposed to be dreaming. Well, since these people know they're dreaming, they have some power over the place, which causes problems. So he basically just captured people, because dreamers are still coming to the Dreaming, and he's captured them and put bags over their heads and used their innate abilities to sort of force hold the Dreaming together. It's not working very well. And at the same time, Lucien is literally falling apart, and they somewhat indicate that's because the Dreaming is being destroyed. Well, he ends up finally talking to Dream, Daniel, who he finds, and Daniel reveals basically like, yeah, I'm really sorry about what's happened to you, what's happened to the Dreaming, but he basically says, I'm a bounce. Like, he's walking out of reality, and he didn't say why, or if he, I mean, he knows this is a very bad thing to do, but he's doing it anyway. And his good friend, Lucien, who's technically one of his oldest friends, is dying, and he didn't show that much sympathy. Like, he's just like, oh, yeah, you're pretty much going to be dead soon, and that sucks. And you can't go back, by the way, because there might not be much there. And the big tease is pretty much everyone's dying, and it ain't going to get better because Dream is leaving. We don't know where, but he's leaving. And there was this new whatever that Kane was talking to. And they're sort of indicating that might be a new member of the Endless, but I don't think that quite makes sense because it wouldn't happen in the Dreaming. But we'll see, because that was in the next issue. And everything's very, very dark and kind of down in this book. Good things aren't happening. Even Merv Pumpkinhead was the other Dreams. They were upset because he's just like, hey guys, come on, Judge seems bad now, but we just need to give him a little time to get his bearings and figure out what's going on.
He's a great character.
But their next response was, string Merv up. So they're not happy with him, since this is technically his fault.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Now, them establishing that Dream had been incapacitated or asleep or whatever.
That was in the original series.
Okay. Recently, you had me read 2 Sandman trades. Now, I assumed part of the reason why you had an ulterior motive was not only were those good and you wanted me to read them because we had light weeks, but it would have helped when we read this series.
No.
Okay. Cause I'm like, oh, perfect. I'll know exactly what's going on now. Cause I'm sure, Alex had enough foresight to be like, well, Tony didn't know what was going on in Dreaming. And I feel
so,
part of that is because of what happened in Sandman. So.
Okay. Here's the deal with that. So the 2 books that would have helped you most in this are books 1 and 2 of Sandman, which I didn't have you read. Mm-hmm. Book 2 I actually really like, but I don't remember why I didn't want you to read it. But I didn't want you to read that one.
It's probably because I complained about the first book, the art.
Yeah, but the art's different in the second one. But I did think you might not like the art in the second trade as much also. I can't remember though. But I didn't have you read those because that, and a lot of these characters, they're in Sandman, but they get developed more in the original Dreaming comic, which I wasn't going to have you read.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't really matter because, like, I don't know. Whenever you read the first 2 issues, they'll introduce the characters for you and that'll help you out more. The core of what's going on is Dream is not in the Dreaming, which causes the Dreaming to go to shit.
Mm.
And there's a bad guy who is taking advantage of this.
Okay. Seems easy enough. Hopefully I can read the next issue so I can have a better idea what's going on.
Yeah, because I do like this book. It's very different from everything else we're reading, and it kind of reminds me of it reminds me of Sandman, actually, but it's moving a story a lot quicker.
All right. Since we're talking Vertigo, and that's part of DC, let's talk DC Mainline with Young Justice, #1, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Patrick Gleason.
If this character is actually called Teen Lantern, I will not read this book.
Now, okay, I had the same reaction at first. But the character started to grow on me a little, so.
It's such a generic character. Like, it's fine for this team. And.
See, that's my one complaint about this team, is that it's so big.
It's not that big. There's like 6 people on it.
Seven.
Right now there's Robin, Wonder Girl, Impulse, Superboy was there at the end. Jonah Hex's granddaughter? Yeah. I don't know. What was her? It was a new character. Jesse Hex?
Let's see if it's... I have the write-up here.
Jamie Hex?
And then Emma Amethyst or Amethyst?
She hasn't joined the team yet. She was at the end of the book.
And then,
Teen Lantern. So seven people.
That's
not that big. That's the Justice League. That's the core Justice League.
Yeah, but they're not the just, they're not over.
No, this is not the Justice League.
They should have started with like four or five members and then gradually the team gets bigger. Cause I feel like.
No, see, I'm actually going to put them over for this. This is the one thing I wanted to put them over with. I'm really tired of team books where we have to spend five issues putting the team together. In this book, we damn near have the team together at the end of the first issue. And they do not spend a lot of time putting them together. It's like Robin's in Metropolis, people from Gem World. By the way, fucking Gem World, an obscure 1980s bullshit that was never over, is what you're going to inject into this, but whatever. Let's see what they do with it.
It's Bendis. You know he's going to do it.
And they're not really bad guys. I know. Are we going to get fucking Gem World all over the DC universe now? Is this going to be his thing? Because I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for his fucking pet characters to pop up.
We've already seen the solicitation for Naomi, so.
I have a slight issue with the team. I mean, putting Jesse Hex, or whatever her name is. The thing with Young Justice was, originally, it was Impulse, Robin, and Superboy. And then Wonder Girl joined, which was fine. And then Arrowette joined, which was slightly off because she's... I like the idea that the teen versions of the superheroes got a book, or the younger, so they weren't even really teens at the time, because otherwise they would have been in the Teen Titans. There's no Aqualad anymore. Like, Tempest is too old to be on the team. He's in the fucking Titans or whatever. Everybody's in the Titans. So that was all fine. And I guess the idea behind Teen Lantern is that we've never had a young version of Green Lantern. I mean, Kyle was young, but not this young. Although, why do we fucking have this many people from Earth with Green Lantern rings? So I'm assuming she doesn't actually have a ring.
Well, to be fair, it's not like Hal is on Earth.
But he still protects Sector 2814, motherfucker. And fucking John does too, and John still has a ring. And Kyle still has a ring, although he's got different shit going. I'm just saying, too many fucking humans have lantern rings, but... So I don't think she actually has a ring. I think there's something else going on, but she can make green shit. So, and she did indicate she's going to come up with a better name than Teen Lantern.
Hopefully. We can only hope.
The people from Gemworld attacked because Earth keeps having these crises. Seven of them, they said, which I believe is a correct number. And every time they do it, it fucks with Gemworld, but nobody on Earth gives a shit. And when they show Gemworld, it's like post-apocalyptic shithole. So, but nobody on Earth cares, which is true, because nobody on Earth has ever given a shit about Gemworld. So, that's true. But they end up fighting the guys, and to show what a threat they are, Robin by himself is pretty much able to beat the shit out of the heroes of Gemworld, who just want to talk to Superman. Like, they just come wanting to talk to Superman, or Robin's beating the shit out of them. And then everybody jumps in to help. They reveal something's going... First of all, Impulse is there. I don't know when he came back.
They didn't feel the need to establish, like, how and why he was there.
People did ask who he was. They're like, who are you? He goes, Impulse. And they go, yeah, who? And he's like, Kid Flash. And they're like, why don't you just fucking say that? Well, probably because they wanted to make a point and have him be Impulse and put the old costume in. And they de-aged him again, so he's a hyper motherfucker.
Well, and aside from, I think, Robin and Wonder Girl, they didn't know who he was.
Did they not?
I mean,
well,
the
other characters, though, like, they didn't know.
They didn't know, but they knew who he was. I'm sorry, I said that backwards.
Oh, like the general public doesn't know who he is?
Yeah, but Robin.
Okay, so this might be a rebirth thing then.
But they knew who he was.
Yeah, that's fine. And they should have. Well, and Superboy in the end knew who he was. And I'm not sure if Superboy, that version of Superboy, was a character in the New 52.
That's another thing I'm thinking, because remember how I was talking earlier how they've sort of shown their hand, especially with like all the Legion stuff. I get the feeling he's also something that's coming out of Doomsday Clock.
And maybe I don't.
Because he
I don't know though. I'd have to do research and see.
He has not been a thing in the Rebirth or the New
52. Are you sure of that?
I'm pretty sure. I'm sure we can go back and research, but as far as I know, they haven't used the Superboy.
Well, that was 100%, and like that, this isn't a redone Superboy. Like, this is 100% the Superboy who's in Young Justice.
Yeah.
So it's the old Superboy, which is good. But he didn't do anything in this issue. He took a hug from Impulse, and that was about it. And so the team is gonna be Robin, Jonah Hex's great-great-granddaughter,
mm-hmm.
I guess, maybe, who her power is she has guns, which led to one funny moment in this where they're shooting the people, and Robin's like, are those real bullets? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, do you maybe have something slightly less lethal? And she fucking goes into her little box of tricks, because she was moving to Metropolis at the start of this issue. When a cop pulled her over, she had a shotgun in her car.
The cop called her on it. He's like, "Oh, that's okay. My papa gave me that."
And then she's like, "Where I'm from, everybody keeps a gun in their car because she's from Texas, y'all." And everybody in Texas has a fucking gun rack with a shotgun in it. Bendis, you Boston fucker.
She needs to team up with Rogue.
She should, y'all, because she's from the South. Texas ain't the real South. Yeah, I said it. What's up? It's too big. Yeah, so her, Wonder Girl, there's something going on with Wonder Girl. Like, Robin saw her, and he's talking to her. She's like, yeah, I'm in the city, but I don't really know why, and I'm not really sure what I'm doing. And I'm not really doing the superhero thing right now. And he's like, oh, okay. And then basically, oh, shit, we need your help. And she's like, oh, God damn it. And she bangs the bracelets together, and she goes to help him fight. And she's like, oh, I'll just deal with what happens later.
So you're down on this book, so I have to ask. Are we reading this issue?
I'm not down on it. It sounds like I am. I'm down on aspects of it. I think he got the characters right that I give a shit about. I don't hate the new Hex relative character. I think she's kind of funny. Teen Lantern, if they give her a new name, or him, did we even see who it was? I think it's a her.
I think it's a her, dude.
Yeah, I think it's a her.
But I think the character is wacky enough, it can work.
Well, I just hope that they give it a different name and reveal what's going on with it, and hope it doesn't actually have a Green Lantern ring. And then in the end, it's, you know, Robin goes to Gemworld and Princess Amethyst is there and has her light sword and asks him what he's doing there. And she's apparently going to join the team too. So
it's funny you hate when they do the, oh, let's spend X amount of issues getting the team over or putting the team together. But I like that, especially when you're dealing with a team with seven members.
Yeah.
Or you have an arc where it's just, you know, the four or five members. And as the book continues, you add more to the team.
Well, but the thing is with some of them, like Wonder Girl, Robin, Impulse, and Superboy, you don't need to bring them together. They were already a team. Like, they're all friends.
Yeah, that's what I said. Okay, first issue, you have them, and they deal with something. And then eventually you start rolling out more characters.
Well, instead, I think what they're going to do is they're going to develop the new characters. And there's only two new characters. They're going to develop them in the coming issues, because nobody knew what fucking Teen Lantern was or what she was doing. And Amethyst, they only found at the end of the issue, and she's being presented as being in opposition to the team right now. So they'll have to get her on the team. And they were the only new ones. We also have to figure out what's going on with Superboy. Like, why did he just happen to be there? And how is he even around? And Impulse, I don't think they're going to deal with it, but I'd like to know why he's there. You know, I'd just like to know.
I'll read the next issue, but this book is already starting to grate at me.
Given my lack of patience for Bendis, I enjoyed it.
That's good.
I mean, focus being on fucking Gemworld pisses me off because I so don't care.
Yeah, but it's Bendis, and any opportunity he can to dig something up. He's like opposite. He's like Bizarro Grant Morrison. Like
Grant Morrison takes old shit and tries to make it interesting.
Yeah, whereas Bendis kind of digs up old stuff that nobody cared about, and like he just brings it back and doesn't do anything with it.
Well, hopefully he does something with this storyline. And I don't know if they're going to bring old Young Justice villains back. They didn't have that many. They really only had like 3 villains. Or what they're going to do, or what the problems are. I'm interested to see what's going on with Wonder Girl. I'd like to know what's happening with her. And so, the problem is, with the book, I don't care about the plot, but I want to know what's going on with the characters. Oh, and Robin is Tim Drake.
Yeah.
It's not. And that was the thing, when I'm looking at the front of the issue, I go, is that? I'm like, Damian's costume is different.
They draw him like Damian, though, on the cover.
But in the book, he doesn't look like Damian.
And it's clearly not Damian.
No. And he's not a huge dick, so that's how you tell the difference. I don't know if having 2 Robins running around is a good idea.
So, am I to imagine, Wonder Girl, you're asking what is the secret of her powers?
That's Wonder Boy.
I know.
I know what the secrets of her powers are. She's fucking related to Goddess, and she bangs her bracelets together and wears a t-shirt. I don't know.
Cool. That's enough for me. All right, let's move on to our next book. Since we mentioned Teen Lantern, Green Lantern number 3 by Grant Morrison, art by Liam Sharp.
This was just Grant Morrison having fun.
I was thinking, because I was reading this, and I'm like, you know, there's times where I'm wondering, is Grant Morrison really for me? It's like, I understand why most people like him, but sometimes he gets on my nerves. But this issue was great.
It was such comedy, though. Like, and it's the good kind of comedy in comics, because we're playing with really high stakes. Like, basically everyone in the world, in the earth, is going to die. But he's playing it up for laughs. So what happens is, a group of intergalactic slavers have shrunk the earth and are selling it at auction. And a couple DC villains are bidding on it. And, you know, like fucking Steppenwolf is there. And the Dominators. And I don't remember who else, but there's just a couple DC villains who are bidding on it. And then this guy comes in who looks like OG God. Like big beardy motherfucker.
Oh, and they even mention in the story, it's like... how can you guys be so cool with this guy? You don't know what he's going to do with our planet. And then they mentioned, well, a couple of people on the planet were kind of cool because he sort of resembled, it was something. And then they're like sort of the Judeo-Christian Old Testament God.
Yeah, since he looks like God. And also, he gave everyone superpowers.
He's all like, you realize within a couple of generations it's going to kill everybody. But he's like, we don't care. We have powers now.
Yeah, that was the fucking, so this guy buys the earth, and Hal the Green Lantern Corps is watching this all go on, and they run in and they go to arrest them all. By the way, Hal straight up murdered a dude.
Cool.
I don't know how I feel about that. Like, what happened was he was a horrible person. He was a guy who sells entire planets to slavery, but he's talking and he's like, oh, but it's my culture. It's everything has value and blah, blah, blah. And Hal just straight up shoots him.
Is that going to be?
And then he's like, and he goes, he was coming for me.
Oh, yeah. That's how the issue ends. He's like, you guys all saw it. He was coming right for me.
No, it didn't end with that. That was like a joke in the middle of the book.
No, but that's how the issue ends.
I thought it went on with the...
No.
Okay. Well, yeah. So Hal just fucking straight murdered a dude. Mm-hmm. Like a bad dude, but still, he fucking killed him.
Now, you mentioned it and I sort of dismissed it. You're like, am I the only one that's getting this bad vibe from Hal? And I'm like, no, I sort of dismissed it and I sort of put you down. I was like, I think you're just seeing...
Yeah, but he just killed someone.
No, this confirms everything you thought of the last couple of issues. Now, I wonder, is that going to be the gimmick of this book now? Is Hal Jordan Dirty Harry? Is he the Green Lantern that does the right thing, even though it's...
I don't...
Because you can't say it's not within his character because of all the Parallax stuff. You can't say he doesn't have it in him, and you can't say this...
Parallax wasn't him, though. It was a space bug, remember?
Yeah, but he already has a history of doing stuff like this. And it's not like he's not doing the right thing, either.
Well, cops.
He's doing the right thing, but you're right. He's not supposed to be doing this, though.
Yes, he's not supposed to be murdering criminals. And Grant Morrison, for any of his faults, he does understand the characters of the DC Universe very well. He doesn't destroy characters. Like, he keeps them true to what they are.
That's why I'm saying it's like, this is not too far-fetched to what the Hal Jordan character does.
I think it is. Hal Jordan, like, your example is, like, Parallax. Like, that was when he was basically... I mean, originally it was he lost his shit, and then they retconned it to say, no, he was controlled by an evil space bug. Thank you, Johns. But still, okay, in current continuity, he was controlled by an evil space bug. Before that, he did nothing wrong.
But didn't he, isn't he sort of like a Green Lantern that bucks the system a little?
But not as far as, like, killing people.
That's why I'm of the impression that it's a little bit of departure from the character, but it's not.
Murder is a big departure. He didn't just murder. He murdered and then told other Green Lanterns to lie about what happened.
Yeah, it was great. I loved it.
Well, like, and it's interesting, and it's funny. I'll give it that, but, you know, especially with all this going on. Now, the other humor book came in, He goes to talk to the people of Earth, and he talks to, I don't even know what we're supposed to call him. He goes to talk to Pi, his Eskimo buddy.
That's even better, because it's like, you would think he'd like get like a crowd, a swath of human beings and talk to them, but it's like, no, he chose just his one friend.
Well, there were a couple funny things, like the shepherd tells him, he's like, well, nobody, the dominant life forms on the planet, they're not fighting this. And he's like, what do you mean? He goes, well, the insects and the bacteria haven't said anything. And he goes, they're not the dominant life forms. And he's like, oh, well, I just figured since there were so many more of them that they were. And he's like, no, it's the people. And then Hal finds out the people are okay with it because they all were given superpowers. The reason he gave them superpowers is because he made them so small they can't do anything to him. So it doesn't matter that they have superpowers, but they think it's pretty cool. Now, they also mentioned gamma radiation, which is making people act out of character. So that may be what's going on with Hal in this issue, and that may also be why the people of Earth are all super happy and don't care that they're going to be eaten. There was a great fucking joke when Hal shows, like, I guess he's like the president of the United States. He shows him, he's like, you think he looks like that? He doesn't even look like that. He looks like this. And he's like a big Cthulhu monster.
Yeah, with tentacles he's and like, eyes everywhere.
And he's going to eat your planet. Yeah, and he goes, well, you know, I think we've moved past the our the point in history where we judge people based on the way they look. And he's like, but you're going to – you're just going to let all this happen and let, like, your great-grandchildren deal with it? And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, okay. I know Grant Morrison's like a big liberal, but he's totally writing this as if you're a libertarian.
Oh, okay.
Like when I'm reading it, like the whole perception that the government just doesn't care. They only care about what's good right now, and they're not looking at what's going to happen to future generations.
It's funny how you see that for the politics, whereas I saw this as an analogy for global warming.
But he didn't mention global warming at all. He literally told them, like, you don't care. Well, I guess, yeah, you could look at it that way.
That's the way I saw
it. I mean, he didn't say, like, well, the Fed is destroying our purchasing power or anything.
No.
So it's not, you know, it's not like that. But he was still, you know, he's just like, oh, no, this is okay for now. We all like
now,
it.
Now, normally someone like that would irk me, but because it's Morrison and it's
it was
story,
done for laughs.
It's done so over the top. It's like, how because can It's like the 1% in Archer and Armstrong. It's like it's so over the top. How can you be offended?
Well, yeah, I mean, in this, you got to understand what I'm saying. He had this conversation with the president. The biggest panel on that page is the giant fucking monster with worlds on strings salivating at the chance to eat them. Like, it's completely ridiculous.
He's like, you know, they're he's going to eat you. He's like, yeah, but it takes a couple generations for them to get fat.
Yeah, we're gonna have to eat a lot before he'll let us do that, and it'll be really fun and nice.
And like, it's gonna take a couple generations, so it's not gonna be our problem.
Yeah, and then, you know, he killed the slave master, and the issue ended. That if Morrison just keeps doing this, this book could go on forever, and it would be really fun. I would love reading it every month.
I am terrified that, you know, the first trade is gonna be done. And he's going to pass this off to somebody else.
No, Morrison doesn't do that. He stays on books for a really long time. He always does.
Well, he still hasn't done, what's it called? What's the name of that one superhero? The one with the portals.
No, because they gave him fucking Green Lantern. He's probably not going to do it now. He wrote in the, they did an annual or something, and he wrote one of the stories in it.
Mm. All right. Let's talk our final DC book, Batman 62, writer Tom King, art by Travis Moore.
Issue was a dream.
Yeah, I'm getting really annoyed. I was fine with the last issue sort of not discussing the big cliffhanger of Thomas Wayne just showing up. But
yeah,
this is the second issue now.
Normally, I've become very good at King's use of symbolism, and I can pick things out in his writing in this issue. While I know it was Batman was having a fairly frightening dream that related to all the events that are going on in his life, and apparently he's upset that marriage didn't happen, is the one big reveal in this. I do not understand why he was fighting a pig guy in a butcher's.
That's one of Batman's villains.
In a slot. Is he?
Yeah.
Okay, I Professor have no Pig. Idea who this character is.
Professor Pig. Let me look this up.
Wow.
Let's see.
I will wait.
Let's see. Professor Pig. Yeah, it's
PYG.
Yeah, PYG. It's a fictional supervillain appearing in American comic book published DC, commonly as an adversary of the superhero Batman.
I've never seen this character.
The only reason why I know about this character is because of that terrible CG Batman series, Beware the Batman. I think they featured him as either one of the first villains. And I was like, this villain's stupid. And then I did a little research on it. It's like, oh, it's a legit Batman character. Okay, I take it back.
This is a hard comic to discuss because we found out at the end he was dreaming.
Yeah.
So, honestly, I missed a lot of the subtext, so... I mean, Batman couldn't hear in this, which, and it was clearly going on now because he's talking about all the stuff that's going on with Bane, and he talked about how he didn't marry Catwoman, so it is current, but in the end, like when Damian shows up, that, you know, and basically revealed, oh, you're dreaming. And then the issue just kind of ended, which is fine. But since I don't think I fully understood what it all meant, I can't talk about it.
Well, I get the feeling it's a lot of foreshadowing.
But it wasn't, because he was all talking about stuff that's already happened.
I'm sure once we read the next issue, it'll make a lot more sense.
And I mean, the not being able to hear is, I mean, if you're dreaming and you're missing one of your senses, in dream logic, that would say that you're worried that you're missing something, or you're not noticing something, which is clearly the case with everything that's going on. It might be Batman's own mind is trying to tell him that there's something weird going on with him. Morrison did that, though. And that's when he had the awesome purple yellow costume.
Yeah, they brought that back.
Batman of Zurina.
Yeah.
Which was the Batman created in case his mind was ever compromised.
Sounds legit.
Fucking Morrison run was great. Although I love King's run, and I'm going to have to finish it to see if it tops it. But yeah, I can't say anything about this.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to unpack.
And I don't mean to say it's bad. Like, no, it was well drawn and the action was good.
It just left you scratching your head, which isn't necessarily always a good thing.
Which I think is what he wanted.
Yeah, and sometimes that works, but you know, when you end with a giant cliffhanger, you want some immediate gratification. I'm fine with the last issue sort of teasing us a little, but this is the second time in a row he's done it now.
Master Bruce is behind it all.
Hopefully.
And then he's going to fight Young Justice, which is going to be really fucked up because Young Justice is kind of a happy team.
Well,
and Master Bruce is going to go in and like fucking start carving him up.
Well, would you rather he fight the Teen Titans with Damian?
No, because Damian would fucking straight murder the kid.
Exactly. So
I feel bad for this kid, even though he's a crazy psychopath.
Why do you feel sorry for
him?
He chooses to be this way.
Yeah, he does. But he's obviously not right in the head.
True, because who would choose to live like this?
Yeah, you got to lock him up somewhere, like Arkham. That's a good place for crazy people, right? They never get out of there.
They got to do the gimmick where he finds out that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and then he just, like, he shuts down, and that's going to be his Achilles heel.
Well, then he's going to be like an evil Robin.
Ooh, or something. That's actually a pretty cool idea.
Like, yeah.
All right, let's. Hey, if this week's gimmick is going to be, we go back and listen to this episode and see how much we were right about. Can the evil Robin also be one of the things we go back and see if
Master, well, I don't know if he's Master actually going to do that. I'm just...
That's a good idea, though. They should do it. DC, that's our idea that you can take.
I don't want to tell King what to write. I trust him.
Okay. All right, let's move on to Marvel with Domino number 10, writer Gail Simone, art by David Baldwin.
So we didn't read the last issue, and this is apparently a two-part.
Okay, I thought it was my imagination. It's like, I don't remember when did Longshot show up?
Well, yeah, in the last issue. So, by the way, this is the last issue of Domino.
I thought the next issue was the last issue.
No.
Okay.
This is the last issue. So apparently Domino was hired to kill Longshot because Longshot was going to end the world by a lady from Wakanda who can see the future and knew that Longshot was going to kill everyone. She couldn't bring herself to kill Longshot because he's such a nice guy. And also he's dying. Like, he's sick.
Well, she didn't know. She's all I know is what I know, and he's going to kill everybody unless I do something about it. So,
but she couldn't kill him.
Yeah. When push came to shove, she couldn't pull the trigger.
So her and her girls and the chick from Wakanda, actually, who wouldn't let him go, went to the Mojoverse to try to get him to a hospital. But the Mojoverse is a shithole, and there's only one hospital, and it's guarded. So they had to fight their way in, and they do, and got Longshot cured. And it turned out he had a virus that basically made him allergic to humans. Mm-hmm. But if he died, it would, like, spread, and then, like, everybody would be allergic to humans, and everybody would die.
So it's a good thing the woman from Wakanda didn't kill him.
Yes. And she said, you know, oh, it changed now. Now he's not going to kill everyone, so that's good. And Longshot gave Domino some encouragement, telling her that she is a hero, even if she doesn't think she is. And she did a really good thing on this day, not just saving him, but she forced the hospital to take care of all the poor people. Well, not, I get poor people isn't really the way to put it because it's the Mojoverse. The children gladiators who are being trained to fight for Mojo's amusement didn't actually free those kids.
No, that'd be too much to ask for.
No. Well, because you'd have to kill Mojo.
Which I imagine, you know, how hard could it be?
Well, he's still alive, so. Pretty hard. There have been multiple Mojos, though, so it's hard to keep him dead.
So the
issue ended, and I flipped the page, and they were advertising, I think it was called Hot Shots Number 1.
Is that also by Gail Simone?
Huh?
Is that also by Gail Simone?
It didn't say, but I think maybe. So it's just going to be this book with these characters with a new title.
So a less marketable name.
Well, I don't think Domino is that marketable.
Better than Hot Shots.
Well, I'm not even sure that's what it's called, but you're again, a book like this, you're selling on Gail Simone. You're not selling on the character.
Well, and also the cheesecake.
If Gail Simone is writing it,
What would be the appeal of this book then if it's not Gail Simone?
It'll be a book that gets 5 issues and then gets shit canned. Like, if Gail Simone is writing it, I will read the next one. If Gail Simone is not writing it, I will not read it. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna read a book starring fucking Domino, Diamondback, Outlaw, and a girl from Wakanda. Unless Gail Simone writes it. If Gail Simone writes it, I will read that. But by itself, no, I'm not reading that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and to wrap up this week's books, Uncanny X-Men number 9, writer Ed Bryson, art by, let's see if I can pronounce this right, let me try, Ilithre Sinar.
That was probably not how you say his name, but it's
okay. It starts with a Y.
I had a driver whose name is Yunel.
Yeah, it's not. This is not Yunel.
Yeah, that's a weird name, right? Yunel?
Yep. X-Men.
Okay. X-Man took over Legion's body in the last issue, and they made a joke that, oh, great, an Omega-level mutant took over the body of another Omega-level mutant. And he's fucking everyone up. Like, they can't fight him, pretty much. They're not gonna win. They try to fight his Horsemen of Salvation. Actually, I skipped the most important part, and this is my biggest complaint in the issue. He was so angry that they tried to kill him that he has gone 100% heel and has decided, instead of fixing the world, I'm now going to destroy the world.
Well, he's dying, so what does he care?
Yeah, but this happened between last issue and this issue. He just suddenly completely flipped. Now that I know they're doing Age of X-Man, and it's apparently going to be, oh, we're all going to go fight, Nate here. Have I told you I really like this character? Like, I've, because Warren Ellis wrote him.
Nice.
And Warren Ellis did a lot of really good, because they basically gave Warren Ellis this character. There was a period in X-Men, I believe it was after Morrison left, where the books kind of, like, Whedon was writing it, but not everybody liked him, but then some other people were writing it. There was this point in time when they told Warren Ellis, like, you could do anything with X-Men characters, but they can't be the main X-Men characters. So he picked, like, Pete Wisdom and some other people to put in a new Excalibur that was completely different. And then he picked X-Man. And he completely changed the character. And his run was really, really fucking good. So I've liked the character ever since then. And I don't think they use him right. And in this, where he goes from being, like, what he was doing was wrong. He was trying to force the world to be good, which is not a good thing to do. He can, because, you know, super powerful.
Omega level mutant, who can change reality. But
you should not force the world into change. That is not the correct thing to do. But he was going to do that. Now, that was his whole goal, but he decides now, no, you guys tried to kill me, even though I'm dying anyway. So I'm going to fucking destroy the world now. Because since you tried to kill me, and the X-Men are always going to be around, ruining everything, I'm going to fucking destroy the world. It's ridiculous.
Now, remember a couple issues back, I said, okay, X-Men, his heart is in the right place, but he's sort of going about it the wrong way. And when a couple of the X-Men were talking about killing him, it's like, hey, that's a little extreme. I don't remember the X-Men being all about killing. It's like, hey, maybe they shouldn't kill the guy. Maybe he's just misunderstood. After reading this now and not having read the previous couple of issues, maybe they were right. Maybe killing him was the way to go.
By the way, look at one of these variant covers for the event. This fucking cover is awesome.
Without having seen it, I bet it involves Longshot in some way, shape, or form.
No, it doesn't. It's a cover for his...
Ooh, that looks cool. Unfortunately, this brings up memories of Earth X, which I was not a giant fan of. And I guess for me, clicking on that it delayed our conversation. Alex, are you still there? Uh-oh, that's not good. I'll hang up and I'll see if I can get him again. Alex, are you there?
Oh, what happened?
I guess me clicking it must have screwed with my internet.
Oh, did you see it though?
Yeah, and I was mentioning before, I was just talking to myself, it brought up images of Earth X, which I was not a giant fan of, but
I wasn't either. But yeah, it is. So that's a fucking cool cover, though, isn't it?
It's funny you said you're not a big fan, but I remember Dave recommended that to me, and I started reading it. And at no point did you ever say, "Hey, Tony, maybe you shouldn't read this because it's not the greatest."
Whoa! Because what I said was a lot of people really like. I remember talking to you about this. I said a lot of people really liked it. I didn't like it, but I was a DC reader. I wasn't a Marvel reader. I didn't know who half these characters were. And I think I even said maybe I'd like it more now if I read it now.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
I don't know, because I've never had any interest in going back and reading it.
It's maybe in the 90s it was a big draw because we hadn't seen a million variants of modern-day superheroes. But if you read it now, it's just like, okay, the gimmick is it's another reality and it has a bunch of takes on Marvel superheroes. It's like, okay, that's been done a million times to death. Not just this company, but all companies.
Well, I mean, Earth X was post It was post Ruins. It was post Heroes Reborn. It was post Age of Apocalypse.
But this is, well, I guess Age of Apocalypse. But it's a bit of a departure. So
it's a long form story. That was different.
Yeah,
I guess. But I mean, I don't even remember it. I bought it because it's fucking Alex Ross covers, and the first issue I realized not only was he not doing the internal art, but the guy doing the internal art is not terribly suited to a book that's full of superheroes. But he was suited to a book that took place in a shitty future. So I wasn't sure how I felt about that. I remember Machine Man being a really big deal in the book. And, like, any book that's going to use Machine Man, it's like, come on.
It's kind of suspect. Yeah, I know what you mean. All right. Is that going to do it for this week's books?
I believe so.
All right.
Because we didn't read Martian Manhunter.
No. And we all know why.
Because you're a racist. I was totally fine with reading it, too.
I asked you. I'm like, hey, should we?
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't care. Like, whatever. I haven't read it yet.
You're like, well, my main interest is number ones, and we already read number one, so.
Yeah. It's like, when I found out it was a miniseries, it's like, do I really need to keep reading this? Not really.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's move on to our final segment, next week's books.
God, I was gonna say, what the fuck? And then I'm like, oh, that's Chris Jericho. Dude, AEW is gonna get Fozzie over.
Yeah, you got that ball rolling last week. You picked that Conan song, and I was like, ooh, there's so many wrestlers who have written and performed stuff, and it's like
Hulk Hogan has.
Yeah, and I'm like, who could I pick? And I just thought, you know, who's kind of timely nowadays, especially with the Tokyo Dome and AEW. Let's pick some Fozzie, and let's pick a song, not just any song, a song that WWE actually put over the Kill a Stranger. In fact, I don't know if that was his entrance music for a little bit, but I know for sure it was a pay per view theme.
He always had his same song.
Okay. But that was a pay-per-view theme, so.
I said to somebody on the board today, they were like, aren't you going to miss Jericho at WWE? And I'm like, are you joking?
His last run was good, though.
His last run was good because of him and Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens isn't even on TV as far as I know.
Well, because he's hurt.
So, and they already did everything they could do with it.
But with the way he reinvents himself, you know he could think of something.
Yeah, right now he's coming off like a fat Clockwork Orange guy. It's fucking leading him to new heights. DC Comics, Batman Who Laughs.
See, I was wondering if you were going to pick that.
Yeah, I told you I have to read it.
I think we've sort of found out that you don't necessarily have to read it.
I have to read it. I have to understand. Flash 62. Oh, there's a book called Goddess Mode. Is that like Brie Mode?
Hopefully not, because that involves getting crazy wasted.
No, that's what it used to mean.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Hey, and
besties.
You got ahead of yourself. You went straight to DC. You forgot. Let's see if I forgot what publisher it is. I believe it's Boom with Firefly.
I'm not reading that.
You're not reading Firefly?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, remember? Because they lied.
That's right. Remember the hook was, oh, we're finally going to show what happened during the war. And like,
they're showing bits and pieces of one thing that happened.
Yeah.
I don't need that shit in my life.
Okay, so what happens in Goddess Mode?
It's a number two, and I don't actually want to read it. I just...
Bestie!
Dragged violently into a secret world of monsters, magic, and meta... No, fuck, no. I don't even like... The solicitation is pissing me off. Judge Dredd Toxic, number three.
Ah, I forgot that. I made my little mock list again.
All right. No, I'm scrolling now. Middle West, number three.
Excellent. Good job. I got that as well.
Conan, number two.
Yeah, ole.
Did not forget about Conan.
Did you like the episode of the name of last week's episode?
Yes.
In Crom we trust.
Fantastic Four, number six.
I'm right, FF6.
All right, let's read Invaders, number one.
Who is it by?
I don't know. It's got a lot of covers, though.
God, I'm going to get mad if it's going to be...
I don't think Charles Soule is writing it.
Yeah, because...
Chip Zdarsky.
That Spider-Man series was not good.
Okay, well, other people liked it.
And that one-off that I had you read, the Namor one. That
well,
was also not good.
That you told me not to read. Well, he's not always bad, so...
His Howard the Duck was really good.
Uncanny X-Men number 10.
Yep. That's what I got.
That's that.
Cool. I believe that is a grand total of 8 books. That seems to be our new regular now, 8.
Well, it's not our fault.
Yeah, well, it sort of is because we took all that time off, or I took all that time off.
Well, yeah, but what fuck? Which of these books did I be reading anyway?
I'm sure there's something we should be reading. But
I try to read new.
Especially with Marvel, you're like, ugh. If it's not a number one, I don't want to read it because it's not.
I picked more Marvel books than DC books this week.
Yeah, but I'm more in favor of picking up Marvel books midway because they have the recap pages, and that does help. At least it helps me anyway.
Yeah, but I don't want to read any of them.
That's true. You don't want to read... You want to read Black Widow number one?
No. Because I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, Black Widow, who's writing it? Jen Suska. I don't know who that is.
Asuka?
Jen Asuka. I'm not ready for her.
It's written in broken English.
By the way, Becky Lynch doesn't win the Royal Rumble, I riot.
What is that? What does that look like exactly?
Did you hear what Dave said?
It's in
he
flux.
Said the plan right now is a three-way in the main event.
But as we've seen before in the past, plans can change. Also, Dave could also have bad sources that are lying to him.
He could because they're mad because he's working with All In Wrestling or whatever.
I'm still waiting for Punk to show up on Raw.
In Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That was Steve Austin who told him that, dude.
It's like, it took everybody a while. People were like, oh, is it JR? Is it the Freebird?
It was Steve Austin.
It was Steve Austin. Baga.
Hell yeah, he's going to be in Chicago, and he's going to punch AJ Lee. Give me a hell yeah.
And then Dave, knowing Dave, he's completely straight-faced. He's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, he would, you know,
Kenny Omega.
Wait, Austin, we almost forgot to talk about Conan. He's going to be in, oh yeah, Kenny Omega, 7-star match with CM Punk Chicago, 7-star, 8 stars.
But I'm not on the
cake. It's going to change.
Change the business.
That's his new line. Dude, there's a AEW thread on the board, and he was fucking all over that thread, and the Dave has a conflict of interest thread.
Nice!
Fucking posting every other post. I put in that one, I'm like, well, clearly Dave's not being paid by them, because he didn't pretend their press conference was good.
And as of late, he has been kind of down on the product? Because he was under the impression, I guess.
There is no product!
He was under the impression that I guess they must have got some kind of deal. And when they did that press conference and they announced anything, like all the air inside of Dave just completely deflated. And it's like, well, oh.
His current thing is, because he originally said they have to get TV. If they get a streaming deal, it means nothing. So now he's been slowly dropping that. Well, if they get paid a lot of money for a streaming deal, like, he had to change it. So he's working. He's lowering expectations so then when it's like they don't have anything good to announce, he could sell it as something really big.
Again, and we'll probably continue this off air, but
yes, we should.
Just like Image, it's just like, and I'll try to tie this into comics. It's like
Image is much worse.
You should have had all your ducks in a row and then gone with the announcement. Cause at this point, it kind of feels like they're, and I don't know if this is a proper analogy, but you're building the plane as it's taking off.
My big thing is, except for the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, all the big name indie talent already signed with WWE.
Yeah.
So it's like, you guys don't have Ricochet. You don't have Adam Cole. Like.
Oh, the best one was on the last mailbag where Davis, I think someone brings up the fact that, yeah, if you're Ring of Honor, you're kind of kicking yourself right now. Cause if it wasn't for them helping them out with that first show, they would have never got off the ground. And now they took basically their core of top guys.
And well, like, they weren't their core guys, though, because the Bucks and Kenny Omega didn't, like, hold their belts or
who
anything.
Who they got?
They got the Briscoes and Jay Lethal.
Wow.
Who are probably all going to go to WWE.
Well, as we've established, the Briscoes and Jay Lethal are in no hurry to go to WWE.
Well, the Briscoes might be now because they got all that money.
But are they willing to pay them? And also, the Briscoes are not really a big deal anymore like they were a couple years back.
That's because no one in Ring of Honor is a big deal
anymore. And honestly, if the Bucks want to learn what hot dogging and grandstanding looks like, look at the Bucks. I mean, look at the Briscoes.
When were they hot dogging and grandstanding?
Like maybe 5-6 years ago when they were like the hottest thing on the indie scene. And then eventually WWE passed on them. And, you know, you can only win the tag team title so many times. You can only feud with each other so many times. Eventually, it's like, okay, we've seen everything you can do just about. We don't need to see anymore. That's pretty much where the Briscoes are now.
Hey, did you see WWE announced a tournament?
No.
Yeah, but it's going to be on fucking, and it might be good, but it's going to be on fucking Royal Rumble Access.
Hey, I've learned now when WWE does things on the pre-show, it doesn't count.
Well, it's going to be 205 Live, NXT UK, and NXT. And I can't figure this out, but there's going to be 5 people from each. And they're all going to wrestle matches in a single elimination tournament. And then,
Speaking of tournaments, I hate to derail you, but New Japan announced they're going to bring the CML guys to New Japan. And of course, because it's CML, what's the first thing they announce? Tournament!
I don't get it.
Oh, because that's the gimmick. If you keep up with Dave when he's covering CML, that's the thing they always do. Like that's their go-to.
They do tournaments?
Yes. Constantly.
Well, it's okay. Well, in this one, they're going to have – so these guys don't wrestle each other anymore because they're on different shows. But the NXT people are Adam Cole, Velveteen Dream. I don't know how to say his new name. Dominic Dijak, but he's got a new name in NXT. Keith Lee. And here's a weird one, Otis Dozovich.
Yeah!
Who should be on Raw by that point with the fucking belt.
I was about to say, beating Brock?
Yes, at night one.
And I already have the how you book the finish. Like, 95% of the match is Brock taking Dozovich. but he tries to pick him up for the F5, and he's too fat.
And he can't pick him up.
And then as he picks him up, but then like he immediately collapses, and Otis is like on top of him.
Are you finally all in on Otis Dozovich?
I've always been all in with him.
Oh, I didn't, because you don't watch NXT.
I've seen enough of him.
He's fucking, he does the worm, dude.
Yeah, I know.
And he does a fucking elbow drop, like just a standing elbow drop, but because he's so fucking big, it looks like, oh, that would really hurt. Whereas Keith Lee's big, and it doesn't look like it hurt as much from him.
Well, because he's too athletic.
NXT UK has Mark Andrews and Tyler Bate, who I know, and then three guys I've never heard of because I don't watch the show. Travis Banks, Jordan Devlin, and Zach Gibson. Apparently, Pete Dunne can't be in this because he still has the belt. And 205 Live, it's going to be Cedric Alexander, Tony Nese, Drew Gulak, TJP, and a wrestler to be named later. So Adam Cole's going to win it.
He better win it, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
The problem is, except Dijak, because they've only just started pushing him, Adam Cole, Velveteen Dream, Keith Lee, and Otis are all like 10 times more over than everyone else on this list. So, and the winner gets a title shot of their choice.
So, of course, they're going to pick the UK title.
I watch fucking Adam Cole versus Pete Dunne. It would be great.
Yeah. All right. I got to get going both for the show and then to bed.
Oh, I thought the show was over.
No, I didn't end the sign-off yet. And besides, the show was under 2 hours, so.
Okay. Sorry about all the wrestling talk.
And it's okay. It was only about 5 minutes, and the show's under 2 hours. All right. So, cool. Let's sign off. So, from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios. Good night.
Night.